M. Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington.
Stay inside. Stay off the roads. The last second shopping is not worth it if it would cost you your life.
Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear with a message to the millions across the country dealing with this winter storm. It's causing dangerous conditions on the roads and major problems for those trying to fly somewhere for Christmas. This woman at Denver International Airport is trying to remain positive.
It's an inconvenience, but I think the one thing to remember is you're doing it to be with family, and you're pretty lucky to be able to fly and have those resources.
In El Paso, migrants have been camping outside in the cold. Here's KDBC's Fidel Lorenzo Meza.
Temperatures are below freezing, and that wind chill making it feel much worse here in downtown. The city sending out one of its buses to let migrants in and sit in and keep warm.
It's expected to be one of the coldest Christmas Eves on record. The House just passed a big spending bill to keep government funded through September. CBS's Jim Crisola with details on where some of the money's going.
The city of Jackson, Mississippi will receive $600 million in federal money toward repairing its long-troubled water system. The 150,000 residents of the majority black city were without water for a week in August when the water system failed.
Last-minute holiday shoppers in San Francisco will have to skip getting gifts at Macy's. Workers are on strike. KPIX reporter Lisa Gooden.
Bridget Redd has worked at Macy's for 33 years.
Make sure that you respect your workers.
UFCW Local 5, which represents the workers, rejected Macy's offer.
The company wants to eliminate full-time workers and replace them with part-time workers with no benefits.
Cases of strep are on the rise. CBS's Major Garrett with details.
The CDC is warning parents about a potentially deadly form of invasive strep A infections in children. This after it detected a sharp increase in cases in certain states. Colorado reported 11 pediatric cases of invasive strep A in Denver. And two of those children died. Minnesota has reported 14 cases in children, all of them since November 1st.
A human rights activist in Iran says women detained in recent anti-government protests are being sexually and physically abused. BBC correspondent Sebastian Usher.
What she says is that assaulting women is one of the tools and the weapons of pressure and oppression against women that's been used before, but it's being used more now, and particularly because women have been at the forefront of this protest.
The protests were triggered after a 22-year-old woman died while in police custody. She had been arrested for violating the country's very strict dress code. This is CBS News.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation-related, and Brewing says it's badly needed, as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Cannolis. This is, once again, our weekly review, our analysis, our description, our discussion of the most important stories in the areas of law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so very much for joining me once again on this Saturday, December 17th. It is the 351st day of the year, 14 days remaining in this calendar year. I'm delighted to have you with me. My producer, Calvin, is also here with me in the studios of WAUK, the Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. And we're taking your phone calls both this hour and next hour as well. That phone number, 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. Calvin and I value and appreciate greatly your comments, your questions. Always good, always insightful as we talk about those major issues in law, in government, in the aspiration for justice, the enforcement of the rule of law in the United States of America. We have today, as always, an ambitious but achievable syllabus, a curriculum this morning. We'll be spending most of our time this hour and perhaps some into the next hour as well, talking about two major issues that span both this past week and this coming week. One of them has to do, once again, with the January 6th insurrection. Lots of things happening this past week. Lots of things going to happen in this coming week. Perhaps one of the most dispositive weeks in the entire term of the review above January 6th by the House Select Committee. We'll talk about some things happening in the courts and talk as well about what we can expect out of the January 6th Committee in this coming week. Then we're also going to turn to the other major story coming out of this past week, also certain to animate the stories of this coming week, and that has to do with cryptocurrency and the charging, the bringing back to justice of Sam Bankman-Fried. This fellow was in charge of FTX, a charge now by the federal government with defrauding many, many investors. We'll chat more about what that all means, probably one of the defining financial disasters and events of our time. So those two major issues, and then beyond that, lots of other updates and other things to talk about in bringing us current on things both inside and outside the courts of America. All of that on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me in our discussion. This morning, as a part of our Today in History review and examination, just a handful of things that are significant to think about on this day, December 17th. Way back in 2010, one of the defining events in the history of the Middle East and nations throughout the Middle East, 2010 on this day was the day that a Tunisian street vendor named Mohamed Bouzizi self-immolated as a protest of economic conditions in Tunisia. He was 26 years old. He is a 26-year-old businessman in Tunisia. As a result of that, he quite literally was the one who initiated the Arab Spring, which spread to other countries, resulted ultimately in the Tunisian president, Zahir El-Benyar Ben Ali, resigning. And throughout the coming weeks and months, a huge, huge movement throughout the Arab world to try to reform government, to try to reform the government's connection with people, their citizenry, with mixed results to this day. But unless that initiated today, December 17th, way back in 2010, with a horrific event in Tunisia. Other events on this day, 2014, on this day, was the day that the United States and Cuba reestablished diplomatic relations that were held in abeyance for about 50 years, that finally brokered by the State Department under the presidency of Barack Obama, that back in 2014. And yet another significant event way back in 1903, arguably the most important thing with respect to travel in the world and certainly in our nation. It was today in 1903, December 17th, that a thing happened near Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And you know what that is. Orville and Wilbur Wright made the first successful sustained flights in an airplane. Orville was first. He got on the plane first, went about 120 feet, 12 seconds in the air, and then his brother followed him, marking the entrance of the human race into the airwaves and into the air generally. 1903, Kitty Hawk, that first successful flight in an airplane happening on December 17th of 1903. Just a few of those things happening on this day. One additional one for those of you who are into pop culture. Also, 1989 was the day that the animated series The Simpsons first debuted as a Christmas special, became a series in 1990, continuing obviously to this day. Lots of significant things happening on this day in history. So let's begin. Let's begin with our discussion today about January 6th and the significant events of this past week. And again, on these and all other issues throughout the next 2 hours, I am taking your phone calls. Again, delighted to have you call in on a regular basis at 844-967-2789. And we're going to begin our discussion of January 6th by talking about yet another significant conviction and sentencing that happened just this past week in front of a federal district court judge named Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly is sentencing a fellow named Doug Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N. Those of you who followed the events of January 6th in person at the time on the TV, those of you who have seen a lot of the coverage of it since then, would probably recall Mr. Jensen because he was one of the leaders of the riot on that day. In fact, Judge Kelly, who was sentencing Jensen this past week, described him as one of the ringleaders of that event. You may recall in particular that because of what a particular officer named Goodman had done, Officer Eugene Goodman, he had confronted Jensen at the time that the mob was entering into the Capitol and lured the mob, including Jensen, through the stairwell there, down the hallway there. The judge this past week said Goodman had effectively prevented some bloodshed by luring Jensen and the mob away from the Senate chamber. Prosecutors, during the course of the sentencing this past week, called Jensen the poster boy of the insurrection, and that he had emboldened this attack as one of the first of the 10 rioters who breached the Capitol, again, because of what Officer Goodman had done, luring them away from the Senate, probably prevented a huge amount of bloodshed and other injuries at that time. Significantly, Jensen, in appearing before the judge for his sentencing, based upon his events, his activities of that day, seemed to me to squander an opportunity for some degree of leniency. He gave a fairly tepid statement at the hearing, expressed very little remorse for his crime, so little more than, I want to go back to being a family man and to a normal life before becoming involved in politics. Judge Kelly, as I indicated, criticized that statement, noting that the defendant showed little remorse, acknowledgement of any responsibility. Prosecutors, they indicated, emphasizing this very important and unique pivotal role that Jensen had played during the attack. One of the assistant U.S. attorneys prosecuting the case specifically said that Chenjian was trying to fire up a revolution. He forced Officer Goodman to retreat and went on to say that Jensen had gambled on the fact that Goodman wouldn't pull the trigger of his firearm because of the size of the mob. Officer Goodman was heroic. So once again, we've got a situation where an officer is showing tremendous heroism, preventing the loss of more lives on January 5th, and also ultimately resulting in this conviction and the sentencing to 5 years in prison this past week by Judge Tim Kelly, the district court in the District of Columbia of Doug Jensen, J-E-N-S-E-N, that I identify as one of the lead-ins for what's going to be happening in the coming week. And we know what that story is all about. We know that in the wake of quite literally 900 or more of those kinds of prosecutions, Jensen prosecutions out there, those continuing to be prosecuted by the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Offices, by the U.S. Department of Justice on a regular basis, we know as well that the House Select Committee on January 6th is right now going to be conducting its one of its final, if not its ultimately final, hearings on Monday, having conducted 9 already, a 10th conducted to be conducted on Monday, and then also issuing its major report, which we have been waiting for ever since it began its work way back about a year or so ago. The chief of that committee, the chairman of that committee, has said that on Monday they will conduct a final hearing. He said it could very, very well include some new evidence. And along the way, he has indicated that there will be some releases of information on Monday and probably some addendums to that as well. Benny Thompson is the chair of that committee. He said that the panel aims to get that final report to the public this coming week. He said you'll get all 8 chapters in the executive summary on Monday, attachments released on Wednesday. The hearing again on Monday also expected to be somewhat shorter than the others that the committee has previously conducted in its 2-hour televised meetings, but it will nonetheless be an official business meeting of the committee, and obviously America will be turning its attention to that committee meeting this coming Monday. Significantly, the chair has also indicated that the committee is right now considering making criminal referrals to the United States Department of Justice. He said there could be 5 or 6 of those in different categories, including to the Department of Justice, including to the Federal Elections Commission, and also the House Ethics Committee. What is that all about? What does that mean to make a referral of prosecutions, referral of individuals to those various entities? Well, we know that the committee has in the past made referrals of people who have failed to abide by the subpoenas issued by the House committee. We know in particular that Steve Bannon referred to the Department of Justice, ultimately prosecuted and sentenced by a federal district court for failing to appear before the House committee. We also know that Peter Navarro, the former trade advisor in the White House, his case also awaiting trial in a federal district court based upon the referral by this committee to the Department of Justice for failure to comply with a subpoena issued to Peter Navarro. We also know that Mark Meadows likewise referred no prosecution there by the U.S. Department of Justice, but that by virtue of the fact that the statute contemplates that the predicate for a prosecution is based upon that kind of referral. We're going to talk about other referrals that might be coming out of this committee when we come back here at Morning Cannolis right after this first break.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life.
That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A wind chill advisory continues until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Mainly cloudy skies expected this afternoon with a high of 6 above. West winds 20 to 25 miles an hour. Partly cloudy tonight, 1 below. A mix of clouds and sun again tomorrow, highs around 9 above. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height, currently 1 above.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to our Saturday morning discussion of these major issues in the area of law and government and justice in America. We're talking in this first hour of Morning Cannolis once again about January 6th, reviewing right before the break a significant sentencing of one of those people who broke into the Capitol, the rioters on January 6th, and now moving to focus more on the work and the likely conclusion of the work by the January 6th House Select Committee on the riot of that day. Benny Thompson, the chair of that committee, announcing that there will be a major hearing coming up on Monday, and the release on Monday and perhaps again on Wednesday of some written materials supporting the findings, codifying what the committee has done, and perhaps making recommendations. And those once again are important because the principal bases upon which the House committee has acted, the principal bases upon which any committee of the Congress acts, are really twofold. One is oversight, providing some information about things that have happened in America, determining how government works and perhaps doesn't work in some instances, and then also making decisions about how things should be viewed and perhaps regulated. New legislation. And Benny Thompson has talked about the possibility that this upcoming report, including the articulation of it during the upcoming hearing, will also include recommendations for legislation. So we'll wait to see what that is all about, what he is talking about in particular. But he's also indicated that he's going to be making some referrals of cases of individuals to various entities inside government. The House Ethics Committee might be among them. That, again, a committee of the House of Representatives responsible for viewing the behavior, the conduct of members of the House of Representatives. Also, the Federal Election Commission, as you know well, responsible for overseeing federal elections, determining whether or not there have been violations of federal elections laws, and perhaps at the top of that list, some referrals being made to the Department of Justice. And again, right before the break, we talked about the referrals made to this date based upon the decisions of various subpoenaed witnesses not to appear before the House committee and the prosecutions of at least two of those three, namely Steve Bannon and the continuing trial coming up again soon of Peter Navarro. So we know that there could be more referrals based upon failures to appear, but there's an awful lot of sense that those referrals might also go into substantive areas of the law, some substantive areas which include these kinds of things. Insurrection. promoting, advancing, somehow aiding and abetting the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th. That's one huge area that they might be referring various individuals to the Department of Justice under that theory. A second theory, obstruction of official proceedings. Again, a discreet kind of conduct, again, related to the fact that on January 6th, what was the Congress doing? They were counting the ballots from the Electoral College. So obstruction of that official proceeding, that could be a second area for referral of individuals to the Department of Justice for criminal prosecution. And third, conspiracy to defraud the United States. That also a major area for possible prosecution by the United States Department of Justice, perhaps being considered already. And that leads me to the principal point that I would make just in the area of civics, which is that we all understand the reasons for identifying through this reporting, through the committee meeting on Monday, the results of their investigation, what they have done. It is important that America consumes that and identifies not only what they have found, but also the recommendations, as I said, for legislation, other kinds of things that should happen down the road. The civics point I would make this morning is that while it may be significant in terms of identifying for the public what the committee itself has found, recommending these various charges for conspiracy to defraud the United States of America, obstruction of official proceedings, and even insurrection, none of that is necessary. None of that is part of the obliged procedure here. It is not necessary that there be a formal referral of any of these matters to the Department of Justice for there to be a prosecution. And that's what separates these kinds of crimes from the crime related to failure to appear, contempt of Congress, where there does have to be a formal referral. The United States Department of Justice, as we know well, not only based upon all these cases, is prosecuting the 900 or more people responsible on that day, January 6th, for the riot, the intrusion into the Capitol, the violence that occurred that day. The United States Department of Justice, at least one, perhaps two, maybe even more grand juries investigating many, many other people involved. We've talked in the past about the Proud Boys and others out there who are responsible at these mid-level and higher levels for orchestrating what happened on January 6th. And we know as well, based upon the subpoenas that have been issued, other things coming out of those grand juries, being told to us by people appearing, that the U.S. Department of Justice on a regular basis is almost certainly already pursuing all of these kinds of charges, including conspiracy to defraud, obstruction of official proceedings, insurrection, promoting, advancing, all of that. And so I make the civics point that while it is interesting and while it is certainly significant, and the committee has every right to make those kinds of announcements about what it would prefer to prosecute, have the Department of Justice prosecute, the committee itself, of course, does not have any authority to do that. That is only the Department of Justice can do so. And they will do that. They will do that independent of any specific recommendation, independent of what the committee may recommend publicly on Monday or Wednesday of next week. And that is as it should be. It should not be the case that because members of Congress feel strongly, although that strength is certainly supported by the facts and the law, it's not simply the case that because of that, the Department of Justice should prosecute. Grand juries indict when there is relevant material evidence that a crime has been committed. Their standard is probable cause, and that's what's being done by the Department of Justice to pursue these various matters, regardless of what the House of Representatives committee does in the coming week. We'll talk more about that and about other matters related to January 6th as we continue our exploration this morning of events related to the attack on the United States Capitol.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. With bone-chilling temps, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear with a warning.
You can get frostbite, 20 to 30 minutes of exposure. It is too dangerous to be outside today.
The winter storm causing travel headaches for millions of Americans trying to get to their holiday destinations. Roads are messy and dangerous. And if you've got a flight scheduled, check before you go. This man's at New York's LaGuardia Airport, and he's frustrated.
Trying to search on our phones, figure out other routes, maybe even taking a bus from here to Atlanta, which it'll take us about 21 hours.
Fed workers with a sigh of relief. The House just passed the $1.7 trillion spending bill to keep government funded through September. Not everyone was on board. Republican Congressman Chip Roy of Texas.
You're destroying the United States of America.
Well, the bill is now on President Biden's desk awaiting his signature. CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
The bakers of Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads are proud to support local education with Loaves for Learning, the program that makes it easy to earn money for your school. Enjoy Country Hearth and Village Hearth all-natural breads, buns, bagels, and more, then save the UPC from the package for your school to collect and redeem. Each is worth 5 cents and can be used for books, computers, sports, music, whatever your school needs, up to $10,000 a year. Learn more at loavesforlearning.com. Country Hearth and Village Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Hump Day equals Hump Day. Greg Bach Day.
It is. It is. Put that on your tombstone.
Oh, yeah.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Yes. You've just convinced me towards a burial service now. That's it.
Was it cremation before? Was that your go-to?
Viking funeral?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on The Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to The Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
We are back. We are talking in this first hour of Morning Cannolis all about January 6th, updating you on some of the significant events, both in court and out of court this past week. And again, looking forward this coming week to a major, major presentation by the House Committee presenting its findings of its investigation over the period of the past year, perhaps also making recommendations about legislation, and significantly likely making referrals of criminal prosecutions to the U.S. Department of Justice. And I was making the point, the civics point, right before the break, that consistent with the independence of the United States Department of Justice, referrals like this do not compel the United States Department of Justice to prosecute a particular case. They certainly can be accepted and reviewed sued, but they do not direct the grand jury or any prosecutor to do something specific when it comes to charging a case. In fact, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the Department of Justice of the United States of America, has repeatedly gone on record saying that external political forces will not have an influence on any of the prosecution decisions of his, by the criminal division, by any U.S. Attorney's office, and that is the way it should be. That, of course, also includes the White House. No decisions should be tainted or in any way directed by a president. The Department of Justice should have that nonpartisan, apolitical approach to everything. And so we take with not a grain of salt, but with some understanding about what's going to happen this week, this notion that referrals, as significant as they are publicly, are not prosecutions, and only the Department of Justice can do that, consistent with what the Attorney General has said repeatedly. In that connection, we do know from just this past week that a particular representative of the House of Representatives, his name is Scott Perry. He's a Republican from the state of Pennsylvania, who has, for on a very regular basis, been a leader in the effort to keep Mr. Trump not only his views about the 2020 election alive, but try to keep him in office, even despite the election results in 2020. Perry, sort of a little-known member of the House, but nonetheless, apparently a focus of exactly what the Attorney General has been describing. So we learned this past week that those federal prosecutors, again, independent of the House of Representatives, independent of the White House, making these decisions about investigations and about the kinds of cases that are going to be brought, these federal prosecutors obtained about 130,000 email messages in a January 6th related investigation that appears to be focusing on Representative Perry. These came as a result of some court filings that were released by a chief judge in the district court, showing that the prosecutors are focusing on Representative Perry's communications with three lawyers, two of them who were officials at the Justice Department, who took part once again in efforts to try to use the department to help reverse the outcome of the 2020 election. According to what was released just this past week by U.S. District Judge Beryl Howell, we've seen her in other settings. She's presided over many of these cases, both criminal and also some civil matters that we've talked about. According to this release, prosecutors had searched the email accounts of Jeffrey Clark. Jeffrey Clark was a former assistant attorney general for the Department for DNR, basically for the Environmental and Natural Resources Division of the U.S. Department of Justice, and as a result of the searching of those email banks, came across lots of communications between Jeffrey Clark and a fellow named John Eastman. We've also talked about sort of the architect of the attempt to overthrow the election of 2020, and another person named Ken Klukowski, who was a Clark deputy. All of these things, communications back and forth among all of them. This past week, Judge Beryl Howell orders the release of these emails that show a huge amount of communications among these individuals with Representative Scott Perry. The court orders show that the DOJ had earlier this year also executed some search warrants on the email accounts. A filter team had been set up to ensure that none of those emails back and forth provided potentially privileged information among those 130,000 or so records. That filter team, again, we've talked about that in the past, this process by which individuals who are not involved in the investigation itself take a look at them to ensure that there's no attorney-client privilege that would be somehow compromised. That was done in this case as well. And so what we know from the release of just this past week is that the investigations by the Department of Justice continue to go on unabated and continue to be pursued aggressively. We know that the special counsel responsible now for oversight of all of this continues to work on this aggressively, even as we anticipate this week the announcements by the House Committee of its finding, its result, and likely some proposals for legislation, and perhaps as well, some referrals, again, criminal referrals, people they would like to see be prosecuted by the United States Department of Justice. Again, the Scott Perry matter, an indication of the extent to which the Department of Justice is looking broadly, looking widely at the kinds of people at highest levels who may have been involved in orchestrating, otherwise being responsible for January 6th. As always, we take your phone calls, your questions, your comments, and I'm delighted to have Joe join us again this morning. Joe from Madison, your comment or question this morning about this topic or perhaps others as well.
Thanks, Jim. And it's really two parts. First off, thank you so much for this clarification of understanding that Congress can refer, but the Department of Justice basically does their job.
Maybe
it goes forward, maybe it doesn't. It's based on whether there is sufficient evidence by what the Department of Justice finds to justify having charges. And I'm curious to know two things then. Number one, has there been other cases where a committee within Congress has recommended criminal referrals to the Department of Justice? Has there been a time when the executive branch has said, the president has said, I would like to see criminal referrals of so-and-so to the Department of Justice? So is there a past record of other times when this has happened? And I can understand where it's highly irregular for the Department of Justice. You're supposed to leave them alone and trust them to do their job. But I'm wondering if part of the reason that this is the second part of the question, if part of the reason they're, if you will, kind of diluting the power of the Department of Justice by making a case out of saying we want to see these people prosecuted is that there is a concern of perhaps saying to other people within their own congressional body, we see you or we understand what you're doing has not been right, and that there may be something very powerful in, for example, having the person of Republican co-chair Liz Cheney specifically announcing we would like to see these specific people referred to the Department of Justice. So it's two parts. Has it been done in the past, and how did that work out, if you know? And what do you think about this idea of the power of having this public stance of we spent all this time investigating, and this is what we think? So thanks, Jim. I'll take my answer off air.
As always, Joe, thoughtful questions and comments about what this means, putting in perspective as we go ahead this coming week. I'm going to take the second portion of that first and get back to the first question, the second, if you will. And absolutely, that notion that the committee this coming week is going to be identifying those people that it believes should be considered by the Department of Justice for prosecution, obviously, again, as you articulated so very well, does not compel a grand jury to indict, does not compel a prosecutor to present any evidence. The prosecutors can certainly take a look at that. No obligation at all to do anything with that. Your point, Joe, so very well made and articulated, is the power of stating that publicly. And that is different. That is different from the formal prosecution policy or practice that we're talking about. Inside the United States Congress, Joe, as you indicated, there are mechanisms. We indicated already that the House Ethics Committee has responsibility for oversight when it comes to the behavior and the conduct of people. And so that public airing, if you will, of what the committee has said has both an external and an internal audience, right? The internal audience, other members of Congress, we see you, as Joe, you just said. We know that this is what you have done, and presumably is going to present not an indictment, not a charging document, nothing that we can look at and say this is what a charging entity has said. But here is the evidence that supports that you, for example, if indeed there is some reference, I made reference this past segment to Representative Perry. If he or others are on that list, if you will, that kind of thing, that can be taken care of. That can be addressed in part by the House Committee. Perhaps a Senate committee as well. The Senate committee has ethics. Senate has ethics provisions also that are likewise supervised and administered by its own ethics committee. And Congress has the capacity to respond in that fashion. More generally, absolutely. While I want to make very clear again the distinction between a referral and actual prosecution, the reason for the committee going ahead is to let the world know that this is what these individuals did. It does necessarily invite, ultimately, some comparisons. Ultimately, let us assume that the Department of Justice is going to be indicting individuals at some point down the road, perhaps even a former president. It will invite some comparisons between what the committee is recommending and what the Department of Justice does. But that's not to say that there was any injustice done or the rule of law was not followed, but just that all of these players have participate in this. With respect to the first question that you raised, on a regular basis, agencies of the federal government refer matters to the United States Department of Justice. Those can come from the Congress, as we're seeing now. Those can come from other agencies, the Department of Energy and Labor and Education, Agriculture, a State Department. All of them feed into the U.S. Department of Justice, and all of them on a regular basis make referrals of this kind when they identify, sometimes through their offices of the Inspectors General, sometimes through other mechanisms, that there has in fact been a purported violation of the federal criminal law. They refer those cases. We have seen a recent instance of that when the National Archives coming across what it felt to be some absences of documents from the former president as it's reviewing the documents it now has in its possession, refers this matter ultimately to the Department of Justice when it says, you know what, we're not getting any cooperation. We should have these documents back. They made a referral. So the answer is yes, on a regular basis. All kinds of referrals can happen based upon what other entities of government, including the executive branch, identify as a part of its regular administration of its own agency responsibility. What shouldn't happen? What shouldn't happen, which we saw somewhat in the past administration, was the notion the president would come forward and offer perspectives on who should and should not be prosecuted. That is crossing the line, I think, for most people in the Department of Justice and certainly outside as well, saying that, you know what, that kind of direction from a chief executive that has not been the character of this present president, that should not happen. But the executive agencies can indeed do refer cases on a regular basis. And so we're going to be talking more about those kinds of issues as the committee in this coming week makes those referrals. And again, other agencies out there, the Federal Elections Commission, likewise could make referrals to the Department of Justice as a part of its overall review of this matter. Great questions, great comments along the way. As we continue to take other questions and comments, Dick is also on the line from Madison. Likewise, Dick, your thought or question this morning.
Well, if this referral goes to where I logically think it does, and that means an indictment of the former on any of these charges or, say, all, I highly suggest the Democrats, I don't know if you agree with me, but you know the Republican side of the aisle is going to politicize this. They're going to say, you know, this is out of bounds, blah, 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 on and on and on. And yet it wasn't out of bounds for William Barr to do what he did with the Mueller report. Please, save that for me. All I would suggest is they keep coming with facts, nothing but facts that took them to the indictment,
right?
Because there are plenty of them.
And we know well, Dick, to your very good point, that regardless of what happens, referrals made, prosecutions that may or may not parallel those, the allegation is going to be made, of course, that this was done because of politics. That's the kind of thing the Department of Justice needs to steer very clear of. I'm going to talk more about, Dick, your good question right after this break here on Morning Cannolis.
Work, the kids' practices, household errands, seems like every hour's rush hour at our house. But no matter how busy things get, we still make balanced nutrition a priority with help from Country Hearth Natural Breads. Whole grains and other natural ingredients are carefully blended and baked into delicious, nutritious breads like Dakota Style 12 Grain, Multigrain, and 100% whole wheat. There's a Country Hearth favorite for everyone in the family. Country Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
Knucklehead CBD and Vapes is now online at knuckleheads.shop. Step into your favorite smoke shop without leaving your home. Find grinders, papers, Delta 8, and more, all from your computer or phone. With free shipping on all orders over $50, you'll be sure to find exactly what you like. You can also order for in-store pickup, so there's no wait. Knucklehead CBD and Vapes.
Visit Knuckleheads Milwaukee at 2949 North Oakland Avenue.
Order online today at knuckleheads.shop.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
MyShiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A wind chill advisory continues until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 5 above. Winds out of the west, 20 to 25 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 1 below tonight. A mix of clouds and sun again tomorrow, high of 9 above. About an inch of snow tomorrow night through Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height, currently one above.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves, the Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
And we are back for our final segment in this first hour of Morning Cannolis. Right before the break, I was chatting with Dick from Madison, who was raising this issue about the politicization of potential charges. And that is always a concern here, right? Especially coming from a House committee that is populated principally by Democrats. The allegation is going to be made, of course, that the referrals prompted the Department of Justice to act, which is not the case, should not be the case. But nonetheless, those criticisms likely to come. Dick making the very good point that whatever the report says, whatever the final meeting on Monday reports on, should be premised upon facts, facts, facts. What happened? Who did what? Who communicated with whom? And that's the focus that the country should have on the matters coming out of January 6th and the reports of this coming week. That's also, of course, should be the focus of whatever indictments should issue. And those will probably not come out this coming week, but those should likewise be the focus of America when it comes to what's inside the indictments. What are the facts of those indictments? What's alleged in them? What does the grand jury say actually happened? And presumably for what I still believe is the great majority of Americans, those who do not want our Department of Justice politicized and have advocated against that, will look to those facts and determine whether or not, based upon the material relevant evidence presented at trial, previously presented before a grand jury, there is sufficient evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to find that those crimes were committed. So again, important to focus upon facts. Politicization about to happen, we know very well, with whatever happens here in connection with the issuance of grand jury indictments and other charges coming up. Great points made by Dick. And Gene from Eau Claire, you're also with us this morning here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you for calling in as well.
Thank you so much for your show, and thank you for your wonderful callers. And just thank you for the education and all that you're doing and educating us. I have a question or a point. I'm not sure how to phrase it, but, you know, as a witness and a victim of the crime of the century that's been perpetuated on the entire population of the United States of America, this crime could not have been committed in this manner, or perpetrated in this manner, without assistance of others that were there knowing that this crime was being committed. And it was a crime I watched. I watched the assembly before they marched down. I was watching even when they were going to do the electoral count of Tony Evers in our state. I always watch live.
Sure.
They didn't have it on, and I couldn't find it. And here the other people were having it at the meeting at the same time with the fraudulent electors. This is a huge crime with a lot of people that helped out. And I'm so thankful that you're covering it, and I'm so thankful that the Department of Justice is following the rule of law, and that the committee also is following the rule of law, and they're keeping separations. And just thank you so much for the education and the wonderful calls and comments by your callers. So thank you again, and I just hope that people don't make this political, because it is not.
Absolutely.
It's against all of us.
Gene, great comments. Thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate that. Not only the nice words about the content of our program every Saturday morning, but also about this being the crime of our lifetimes, right? It goes right to our republic, the future of our nation. And you hit it right on the head when you said you were only a witness to what happened. But yes, I think there can be made the compelling case that we are victims of this as well. You can make the case that all 330 million residents of the United States of America, victimized, potentially victimized by what could have happened here, identified by the committee, to be sure, in the coming days or so, but also illustrated by these rule of law indictments, almost certainly coming out. The Department of Justice would not be doing all these kinds of things if we did not anticipate that at some point a grand jury is going to be returning indictments. We don't know against whom. We don't know specifically whether they will be focusing upon these three that have been identified by the committee. Again, insurrection, obstruction of official proceedings, or conspiracy to defraud. Probably some variations on that. Again, Gene, to your good point, we know the Department of Justice has already alleged seditious conspiracy with respect to the oath keepers and the Proud Boys and others whose trials are still coming up in the weeks just ahead. And looking, as you said, maybe the most important implicit, if not explicit point that you just made, that others who supported, assisted, promoted this, that's what these grand juries are looking for. That's also what we should probably anticipate from the committee coming up this Monday. Who is really calling the shots here? Who is calling not only on through emails, phone calls, who is sending out messages to the population to bring people, thousands of people, to the Capitol on January 6th? Who did all that? What was their design? What was their purpose? We know that John Eastman wrote this memorandum that animated lots of this. It certainly had to do with January 6th and the role that they hoped that the vice president would adopt. He appropriately did not in not rejecting the proper votes of the electors. Gene, you identified this false electors notion. That might also be a part of the criminal prosecutions coming up. We know that Lisa Monaco, the deputy attorney general, has said the Department of Justice is specifically looking at whether there were federal crimes committed when it comes to federal electors here in Wisconsin and in at least six or seven other states, falsely indicating that they are the proper electors and attempting once again to affect the counting of those votes by the vice president, by the Speaker of the House of Representatives on January 6th. Lots of things to come and focus on. Lots of things that hopefully will, in the advancement of the rule of law, be the subjects of those grand jury indictments coming up fairly soon. One other matter that's also significant of just this past week is that while all this is going on, the House Committee, the January 6th Select Committee, the continuing focus by the Department of Justice in these grand juries down the street at the federal courthouse, while all this is going on, House Democrats also, through a Representative David Cicilline, who is from Rhode Island, introduced legislation just a couple of days ago, Thursday, to bar former President Trump from holding future federal office under the 14th Amendment. We've talked about this before. We know well that Section 3 of that amendment states that no one who previously took an oath of office to support the Constitution and engaged in, as quote says, insurrection or rebellion shall hold any office, civil or military, under the United States. That in the Constitution of the United States of America, obviously, the 14th Amendment, ratified in the aftermath of the Civil War, when ex-Confederates and others, seceded states, were attempting to rejoin and did rejoin the Union, an attempt to ensure that our government was not run by people who were insurrectionists. This past week, again, representatives in the House of Representatives introducing this legislation to prevent the former president from serving in that capacity. We'll see where that goes. We'll see what happens down the road as all of this continues to be the focus of a huge amount of attention by our elected representatives in Congress. Join us for the second hour as we continue this discussion. Nelson, and then get on to another major story coming out of the criminal practice and criminal investigations of this past week, right here on Morning Cannolis.
In celebration of our first holiday season in Waukesha, WAUK Radio would like to say thank you for welcoming us into your homes, your schools, your businesses, and your vibrant neighborhoods. It was also our honor to broadcast the 59th annual Waukesha Christmas Parade, sharing the inspiration and magic of the season as our community continues to heal and shine.
Hey, Mayor Riley, yep, he's going to come by for a quick hello. Mayor, we brought the mic out just for you, Mayor.
Hello. This is great. This is beautiful.
We're really glad you're here. Chief Daniel Thompson, great to see you. Say hello.
You
Merry
well.
Christmas.
Thank you. God bless everybody.
All
Christmas.
Right, thanks so much.
Together, we are Waukesha Strong.
And thank you all, of course, for listening and being a part of this broadcast. On behalf of Civic Media, I'm Mike Root.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you from all of us with the Civic Media Radio Network and your local...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.